This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Gauteng and FMR in Cape Town.
Well, to get the view from the market, brought to you by FNB Business 48-Hour Cash Accelerator, get great rates and fast access, I've got Pietri Redling. Hayes, can I call you the lover of smart birds and slayer of shibboleths again, Pietri, founder of Herenia Capital Advisors? Welcome for a third or fourth time this week.
Yeah,
I'm getting used to this.
It's somewhat convenient, I won't lie. It's walking distance.
It really is.
And it's nice to be here again.
The Cape Town ethos. Let's not joke. I've got Devin Shoot as well, back in Joburg, head of investments at the Robert Group. Devin, how are you doing?
Yes, good. And you, Michael? Great to be here.
Are you in Joburg or Durban? I forget.
In Durban.
Okay. Yeah. So it's a coastal show. It's a coastal show all the way around. That's fantastic. Right. How do we end the day on the markets, Pietri?
Well, somewhat down, actually. 1.3% down on the top 40 index. The rand weakened quite a bit, currently floating around that 1360 level. So not a very good day. We did also see financials come under quite a bit of pressure. And it's, I think, yesterday we were actually talking about reasons to be bearish versus reasons to be bullish, which is right, which is wrong. And it's been difficult to be bearish because the market's been rallying in our faces all this time, but it's starting to feel like those cracks are starting to show. Many of the local stocks have terrible formations on the charts. Everything looks relatively bearish. So it seems that maybe this is the start of the rolling over. I think it could be.
Is that why you're smiling? Pietri the Bear is back in the studio. But it was interesting to see how we opened in the red, and it was all downhill from there. We ended down 1.26% on the Aussie, a drop of almost 700 points at the top 40 level, 1.34% down 645 points in industrials down, resources down, financials down, gold marginally up.
Yeah, well, we saw some of the gold counters, for example, Sibanye, which is something that we watch quite closely, start the day down and end up almost 2%. So,
there's a lot of speculation that Neil Froneman, the deal maker, is going to do something big in the gold sector. Well, with all the talk of the mining endowment, who's he going to?
It sort of ties in with what we were saying yesterday as well, where there's a lot of talk around platinum group metals and their use in EV. And actually, we saw into the U.S. session, about half an hour before the U.S. session opened today, we saw them running up platinum group metal stocks. So stuff with exposure to PGMs and palladium and that actually performed well. Anglo-American platinum is one of them, Sibanye is the other. So I think that theme is maybe starting to take hold, and it's a long-term game. It's going to take, if we are right about that, it's going to take years of rally. So it's hard to say that it's starting today, but it definitely felt like there was a lot of interest there today.
In all fairness, you look at a counter like Clover, and Pitfall Yuen was a big supporter at the deep value levels. A lot of the massive growth that we've seen ever since the buyout talks happened in the last 12 months of holding that stock. If you were holding it 10 years ago at year 9, you were probably saying, oh, I'm going to get rid of this. If you had waited 12 more months, you really, really happy right now. So time in the market, it's very difficult to do these things. Devin, how are you reading the market at the moment?
Yeah, look, I think what we're seeing now is a lot more uncertainty creep in. I mean, we had a torrid third quarter, or fourth quarter, I should say, of last year. Had a really good January, probably surprised most of us. But yeah, there are kind of some storm clouds building on the horizon, aren't there? These trade war concerns just don't go away. We've got the meeting of the two countries next week, so expect volatility there. And then I would say this U.S. corporate earnings season that we've had has really been a mixed bag and hasn't quite assured the market as much as you would have expected. So I think that's all in play. I think the concerns around the growth in China are still there. If you look at kind of the commentary coming out of ArcelorMittal today, they're expecting global steel demand to continue improving this year, except for China. So I think you're seeing probably quite a bit of uncertainty leading ahead, and you're seeing that play out in financial markets over the last couple of days.
Uncertainty, and let's face it, Pietri, has been a common theme ever since the election of Donald Trump. Markets just haven't been able to square the rhetoric that we see out of capital versus the fundamentals that we're seeing on the ground versus in company earnings and the trade war rhetoric and the real politic that he's playing in this big war between US global domination in tech and IP versus Chinese expropriation of IP and tech, and there all these kinds of issues that are swirling around the market. There's quantitative easing and really a period that is unprecedented in terms of central banks printing money to try and stimulate the world economy. But what we haven't seen is a lot of that money flow into real gross fixed capital formation. Businesses investing in factories, in new growth areas, they've been buying back shares, they've used the cheap money era to stimulate their share prices, perhaps artificially. Is it now time to be very, very cautious and worry about some mangy economic chickens coming home to roost?
So there's two opposing views here. One is one of the greatest traders ever to have lived, a man by the name of Jesse Livermore, said many, many years ago that a bull market climbs a wall of worry. Right? So we always find a reason why everything should collapse tomorrow, but it doesn't, and it just keeps going. The other view is that, yes, maybe we have some real economic headwinds here, and what worries me the most is there's a number of things, right? There's sort of two or three major things. First is the earnings outlook for the U.S. That is deteriorating. Because we've had quantitative easing, we've had corporate rate, tax rate cuts, and all those
and
things
the strong
have been,
dollar, which hurts U.S. companies that are multinational.
Yeah, so we've had these artificial things to help stimulate earnings, share buybacks and all those types of things that have really boosted earnings, which has now sort of come to an end, right? Plus the stronger dollar, as you mentioned now. So these are starting to put pressure on corporate earnings. That's the first thing. Then there is a growing debt problem in the U.S. that we might be overlooking or ignoring, which is student debt and particularly vehicle finance debt. Vehicle finance debt is really starting to become, it's ballooning in the U.S. And then there is also something that perhaps, there's one analyst, Samuel Feinstein, macro dog on Twitter, if you are interested in following him. He pointed out almost a year ago now, if not more, that unfunded pension fund liabilities for some of the companies in the U.S.
Yeah, that is
a few times their market cap. And yeah, we've got a ton of baby boomers that are within the next decade are going to start retiring with defined benefit pensions. How are these companies going to pay that? Those are the three major worries, I think, that could potentially cause a bear market recession type of scenario. How they're going to do, how they're going to deal with that. For example, I saw the other day in the U.S. some guy is saying he wants to be declared younger because he's 60, but he feels like 40. You know, it sounds crazy, but if he gets that right, that kind of sets a precedent that retirement age should maybe not be 60, and that could potentially be solved to the problem of the unfunded pension fund.
Well, it could and it couldn't, and I'll take you up on that, because the big arguments in the States at the moment about raising the retirement age is what that potentially does to Social Security benefits as well. So there in South Africa is a very, very contentious debate about raising the retirement age, because we have such a high youth unemployment, and keeping on the payroll won't necessarily create the space for the new entrants into the labor market. But we have to have these conversations. We're living longer thanks to the likes of Adrian Gore's discovery. Devin, what do you think? I mean, these are very big macro themes and trends here, but what I've certainly been very wary of is the bubbles that we're seeing develop all over the world thanks to record low interest rates from both sides of the Atlantic.
Completely. I think that's probably the key issue that concerns me in the current global financial markets, Michael, is the scenario or the possibility of the withdrawal of liquidity from the system. I mean, you know, as you correctly said, we've been in an environment and almost lulled into an environment of low interest rates, cheap money, lots of liquidity. And my sense is that it wouldn't take too many conditions for that to start being pulled out of the system. So in other words, if interest rates had to be raised faster, and where you've got to then look is on balance sheets, corporate balance sheets, and what the state of those are. Are they able to weather a potential higher interest rates, costs on their funding, etc. Because right now it's easy. Everyone looks clever. It's easy to roll short-term debt. But when that liquidity moves out the system, it becomes a very, very different story. And I have a feeling when the tide does go out, there's going to be a few people without swimming trunks.
Devin Shute, Head of Investments at the Robey Group. Wait right there. I've also got Petri Redlinghuis in studio. We just need to cross to Nkwazi Kombisa to find out exactly what's going on out in the roads. I know it's probably going to be mayhem as everything shut down in Cape Town for State of the Nation.
In Gauteng and the Western Cape, this is Classic Business.
Welcome back with your view from the markets. I've got Pietri Redlinghuis and Devin Shute in the hot seats tonight. And one of the more interesting stories today to emerge at the Mining Indaba. It's been, well, retweeted, shared on wires all over the world in Bloomberg and Reuters and CNN and all the rest of it. And there is a lot of cynicism. I'm not going to lie. We've seen this play before. Back in 2001, Shell said they had found a game-changing discovery in the Kudu field, and it turned into a lot of hot gas. But I think what we see out of Total today is potentially different. A billion barrels of oil condensate or gas, so sorry, natural gas condensate and oil. Wood Mackenzie have given the resource and reserve compliance certificate. Those are pretty big names in the oil and hydrocarbon space. And I think the most pressing question for me, Pietri, is going to be the cost of production. If it costs $80 a barrel to extract whatever oil or gas there is, well, then we're going to have to put the corks back in the bottle, because, you know, a barrel of oil is now at $62. But if it's economic to extract, this has a real potential net benefit for the South African economy.
Yeah. Well, look, I think it's something. It is something like 3.4, 3.6 kilometers down that they had to drill before they found
in this. Rough seas.
3,300 meters or 3,400 meters. That's a long way down. So cost of production might be a bit high. But even so, you know, with I think that this potentially could have an enormous impact on our economy. Particularly, I mean, we were talking about this now. 15% of our imports as a nation is basically energy, oil. Right, so if we basically become completely independent of that, if we no longer have to import oil at all, then we're in a space where, you know, fuel prices come down, the economic benefit is huge. How this plays out, I don't know. We have to wait.
Devin, how are you reading this at the moment? Devin? Ah, I think we've gone dead shoot on Devin. So, Pietri, I'll go back to you. The way I'm reading it right now is there's still too many unknowns. Mm. We're getting quite excited because, quite frankly, the South African economy hasn't had a shred of good news for the last 10, 15 years.
And this is good news.
The last time we were in a good space was around 2008. The construction companies were booming. There was a World Cup happening. Everyone felt good.
And that actually saved South Africa the worst of the global recession. It could have been a lot worse for us, but we had this backdrop, this economic boost that helped us, you know, see out the bad time. And yes, the global, you know, recession impacted us, but not as much as it would have had we not had that situation. Perhaps this project or this discovery could be what saves us from the next one.
What interests me is how jovial the Minister of Minerals was. Gwede Mantash was in an exceptionally good mood at the Mining Indaba, fielding questions from the audience. Hilary Joffe interviewed him again this morning on a panel. He mentioned the Total find, and over the weekend he was on the rig tweeting that the South African government is 100% behind Total. Now, obviously, from a legislative perspective, the big question is, well, what are we going to do about this? If you're based in Saudi or anywhere in the Middle East, you can demand almost an 80 or 90% free carry on any new oil and gas find, because people are almost guaranteed to find billions of barrels of oil and gas there. Here, we're in a frontier market, so you have to encourage exploration. So how do you do that? You say, well, we'll, as the state, take a 20 or 30% free carry and give you the rest. Are we going to do that? It's still very up in the air.
We'll have to wait and see. But if we do go ahead and start mining that, I guess, we have to build a refinery. So that's job creation, right? We are at a point in the on the planet, if you want to say it, the southern point of Africa, where we can really export very easily to anywhere in the world. I mean, the Dutch trading routes came past here. This became a trading point because it is almost the midway point between a lot of different places. So it puts us in a strategic position where we can get a really international client base to export to. And it might be able to put us in a situation where we no longer are reliant on imports for oil at all.
Absolutely. And in terms of our macro terms of trade issues, that is massive. Mm. We currently annually import around 500,000 barrels of oil, 500,000 barrels of oil annually. We're talking about 1 billion potentially in oil and gas. We still don't know the mix
that's
between
what 20
the two.
Years worth
well,
of
well, that is a lot of supply and gives us a buffer to build an economy that transitions to a decarbonized future, which is what we've been looking for. This might be the potential silver bullet that Rovuma was supposed to be, but the government was quite hesitant to pursue because of the political risks of going to the Mozambicans looking for natural gas. And it's also, let's face it, 2,000 kilometers away. This is only a couple of hundred kilometers away. The logistics are so much more compelling. So the cynics will say, why was it announced just hours before the State of the Nation address? It seems too choreographed. But if I was the president...
Even if it was choreographed, it doesn't mean that it's not good news, right?
Well, I don't see Total coming out of this. And as I said, Wood and Mackenzie as well, sticking their reputations on this. So we'll have to follow this very closely. Other big news in the day is the visit by Theresa May to Brussels, looking for further concessions after we saw Mr. Truss say, no, really, there's a special place in hell waiting for those who voted for Brexit without any plan. I really cannot see her extracting much more out of bureaucracy out of Brussels.
Look, I feel a little sorry for her because she, I saw actually a billboard was put up somewhere in England with one of her tweets from 2006 saying that, you know, Britain is best out of the EU. And then the public voted, and now she is the one with the job to negotiate the exit. She's done everything in her power so far. She's taken it back home. Parliament rejected it in the UK. And now she has to go back and try and make a better deal for the UK, and the Europeans seem somewhat unwilling to do that. So it's a very tough position, and I think that... You know what happens with these things? We always have these, everything is going to collapse, it's going to be the end of the world, until like 1 hour before the deadline, and then the deal is struck. So I suspect something like that is going to happen. So, you know, you were talking about uncertainty. That's another source of it, right? This is why people I read something, it was a while ago now, it was in last year, but, you know, CEOs within Europe are very concerned about Brexit and are putting off fixed capital investment and expansions of their business and hiring new people and all sorts of things because they're unsure of how this is going to impact their
business. It's the rules of the game. People can play by the rules of the game. You strategize around the rules of the game. If you're uncertain about what those rules are going to be tomorrow, you're not going to make any kind of strategic decision. And that's why you've segued quite nicely without even knowing it into our next conversation on prescribed assets and how we should be thinking about the way government's thinking about our pensions. Petri Redlinghuis, founder of Herenia Capital Advisors, with your Thursday view from the markets. The last one down in Cape Town. I'm really going to miss you, Petri.
Yeah, it was nice seeing you again.
And I have to remind people that this was brought to you by FNB Business 48-Hour Cash Accelerator. Get great rates and fast access.
Brought to you by FNB Business. Our 48-Hour Cash Accelerator investment account gives you great rates and quick access to your cash. FNB, how can we help you?